You're listening to the Hog Sports Network Daily Podcast. Now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
On today's show, Brandon Marcello, our friend from CBS Sports, stops by. We'll talk about Arkansas Edge and hiring Tom Mars as their new attorney as they try to recoup some fees from players who have transferred away. Ethan Westerman also going to be in studio here. We'll talk Razorback baseball's rain out tonight and the latest on this Razorback softball team that's doing really well. But first, a word from Kendall King.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Brandon Marcello of CBS Sports joins us now. Brandon, obviously a Northwest Arkansas resident. He used to have my job. Always good to see him with us. Brandon, you've been doing a great job reporting on everything that's going on with this Arkansas Edge NIL dispute with Madni Amaliava and Dasmond James. For people who don't know, maybe just kind of give everybody a 30,000-foot view of what's going on with this situation.
Yeah, as I guess a lot of folks know, Athletics Director Hunter Yurachek last week told Arkansas Edge, hey, listen, by any means you guys need to do so, enforce your contracts, which, as a lot of people knew, on the heels of Madni Amaliava leaving, was a way of saying, hey, if someone breaks their contract, enforce it. Go get that buyout money. So upon some further reporting, found out that it wasn't just one player that they're sending letters to. It's been at least two, Madni Amaliava and also Dasmond James, the former receiver who, of course, broke out in that Liberty Bowl and made a name for himself. And so Arkansas's NIL collective goes about hiring Tom Mars, who's just a prominent sports lawyer, as you guys have probably all heard his name before in the past. He's worked on many cases over the last 10 years. He's represented Houston Nutt in a lawsuit. He's represented Brett Bielema in his lawsuit against the University of Arkansas. He's represented some major players and trying to get eligibility done for them over the last decade. And most recently, he was actually involved in a lawsuit where he was representing the Amaliava family and Tennessee's interest when the NCAA was going after Tennessee about a year ago over some potential violations and things like that. So he's been on both sides of the aisle, so to speak. And meanwhile, Dasmond James has retained Darren Heitner, who's another notable lawyer who's been very much a player's advocate over the last several years in this NIL era. And so now you've got the Arkansas Edge NIL collective that's led by Blueprint Sports, seeing if they can go about enforcing this contract, which could potentially land these parties in court if it goes that far along. You know, my feeling is that Arkansas wants to be able to settle this out of court and get it done. Of course, they want all their money, but I'm sure that they would be willing to compromise and settle here. But based off of the early feedback I have received from our reporting, is Amaliava's camp and James's camp have no intention of settling, and they're going to fight this. And they believe that their contracts aren't something that can be held up to legal standards because of everything that's going on in the NIL space and revenue sharing space and all of that. So this is I've told a lot of people, I believe this is a watershed moment in college athletics, no matter what happens, just because it's the first time we've seen a school's collective so publicly say, hey, we're enforcing our buyouts and we're going to go after these a couple of players here very publicly. And I'm going to tell you, everybody in college athletics, the NIL space, is watching this because it's going to set a precedent of whether you can enforce some of these contracts. And if it does, it's certainly going to lead to more schools chasing after players who have broken their contracts.
When Tom Mars represented Brett Bielema in that lawsuit against the Razorback Foundation 5 years ago, there was a lot of back and forth about what was the proper venue to have that lawsuit. The Razorback Foundation said that it was always meant to be heard in state court if there was ever a dispute. Bielema filed it in federal court, and it ended up staying in federal court. Do we know what the venue would be if it does make it to the courthouse?
Washington County Circuit Court, most likely.
Okay.
That's what Arkansas is wanting and would probably get, but who knows? I don't know if this were to go to court, and that would be obviously very favorable for the Arkansas collective.
Why do you think Arkansas is doing this when other schools haven't necessarily pushed back against players? Because Matt Niamaliava is not the first player who's left and potentially broken whatever language is in his contract.
It's a great question. I think that, not to say it was a PR moment, but this is a moment where it's almost like an easy play positively for the University of Arkansas, because the Iamaliava family have been in the headlines so much the last 3 weeks, and more so negatively toward that family, that anything you said about them would be seen positively by anybody in college athletics. And you know, this was an opportunity for Arkansas, considering the circumstances, considering everything that's happened with that family, the kind of the controversy that's been going on, how they've handled things and everything in the media, that this was a situation where they believed, one, this is probably a trend, right, among the family, with Nico doing his situation at Tennessee, and then obviously Madden following. And of course, this is also a different situation from the standpoint of Madden came to Arkansas, went through spring ball, never played a snap, and then he was gone, right? So he was only there for less than 4 months. He signed a contract to be there for a year. And so he went through spring practices, got, you know, free training, took snaps away from other players, and then left. And Arkansas wasn't able to get any return on their own investment. So that's also something to look at. Dazmon James, also at Arkansas, of course, was someone that broke out in that bowl game, hadn't had a catch all season, big mm-hmm. game, and then Arkansas is able to secure him and sign him, and then a few days later, he ends up transferring anyway. So Arkansas has done all this for you the way they see it. They've invested in you. They've helped train you. You have this big game, and then after the game, you sign this contract, and then you believe that you can just leave after signing it. That's certainly a different circumstance as well, and one that they believe that they would be able to fight if it got all the way to court and win.
It feels like this is more about precedence, not about the type of mm-hmm. you know, financial money that they could recoup.
I agree to a certain extent, absolutely. I mean, the money that I've been told that they would be able to get from Madden at the most would be $200,000 based off the buyout language in there. I'm not certain on Dazmon James, but I would assume it would probably maybe be in that range. If not, maybe a little bit less, just because he had signed a full-year contract and had not even gone a few days into mm-hmm. it before breaking it. So this isn't really necessarily about all this money, but it's also about if you can do this and be successful, if you're Arkansas, it gives you the opportunity and also opens things up to everybody else around you in all these other states of, if you break our contract, we can't enforce them now. A judge, whoever, says we can enforce these. If you lose it, then really it's no skin off your back. You could say, well, we know. We can't really deal with this. Or if you're able to settle, maybe this is something now that you won't do so publicly as you are in the media right now, potentially, but do so privately. And now players know that then when they sign with you, all these other players we've had a challenge believe, their lawyers believe that we need to settle because we don't want to go to court. Otherwise, if we go to court, we're probably going to lose this thing. So it's certainly something that everybody's watching across the nation, and it was only a matter of time, right, before mm-hmm. something like this happened at some school and the situation presented itself. But it took a couple of years, and now it's finally happened, and it just so happened to happen at Arkansas.
You know, I was thinking about something this morning. College is meant to teach you about the real world in your field, and you've got the Arkansas State House who passed a bill within the last couple of weeks that exempts the athletes from paying state income tax. It exempts them from FOIA laws that their coaches and their professors and other people on campus have to abide by. And I feel like what's happening is that maybe they're not being taught what the real world is really like. And I wonder if some of this NIL stuff is a byproduct of that, where they don't have the people around them that maybe say, hey, look, you better take a little bit better look at the fine print that's in these contracts.
Yeah, I can see both sides to everything on this whole situation, NIL, in even this case. But I do believe you're absolutely right that if we're presenting an opportunity here for student athletes, for players in their teens and early 20s to make money in a professional type model, they've got to surround themselves with people who are going to be able to guide them through those situations in a professional manner. And sadly, I'm not speaking about any specific player, but sadly, when there's a new market in any walk of life, there are going to be hustlers, people who see that as an opportunity to make money. And I'm not talking about the players here. I'm talking about agents and so-called agents. There are people out there that have no experience being an agent that are now kind of able to see this market and go, ooh, I got an opportunity here, that end up, you know, partnering up with a player that they've known in their neighborhood or where they grew up and say, hey, I'll negotiate for you, I have negotiating power, and we'll deal with this, and you give me a certain percentage of your deal. Not all players are doing that, of course, but the thing is that, you know, some of these players believe in these people and believe what they're selling to them. And these are, a lot of these folks are just people trying to get a payday themselves. They're not necessarily really all that concerned about the player, mm-hmm. even if they act like it. And so, and without guardrails and guidelines, you know, listen, the NCAA and all that doesn't require a database of agents to be registered or agents that have certain qualifications. I mean, I can go up, if I know someone well enough right now, I can go say, I'll rep you. And that's all you really need. And that's just, it's not how it works in the NFL. So why are we allowing this happen in college athletics? Why are we allowing this happen in college football, college basketball? That's a big question. That's something that needs to be figured out, I believe. One of the many things, whenever this house settlement potentially and hopefully goes through, you know, and I think it's really, a lot of this is going to rely on the power conferences and the new college sports commission that they're creating, where they're going to oversee revenue sharing and also have to validate NIL deals. I believe they need to set up a database of sorts where you have a certain qualifications to be an agent and have negotiating power with schools.
I want to ask you real quick about the House settlement. Seems like the reporting in the last week is that maybe it's hit a little bit of a hiccup. Where is that right now? And do you think that ultimately this gets finalized before the next school year?
I think it'll get finalized just because the NCAA absolutely just does not want to go to court. And right now what they're hung up on is grandfathering in players who are currently eligible into these new roster limits. So in a way, you know, we're limiting football players to 105 spots on rosters. But what the judge wants is that if you're currently eligible and you're still there on campus, but you're about to be cut, you should be allowed to stay there and have a temporary lift on those roster limit restrictions. So technically a football team that's supposed to have 105 could have 125 still next year, because they're allowing players to stay there that would have been staying there under the old system. Mm-hmm. But once their eligibility expires, they're gone. And at some point that new roster limit will be 105, and it'll be that static number every year going forward within the next 4 years. The NCAA doesn't want that for whatever reason. My belief is, from talking to people, they're going to reach some type of compromise with the prosecution, and they're going to get this deal pushed through, because no one really wants to see this go to trial, because it's only going to raise costs. But also, if the NCAA loses this thing at trial, we're not talking about, you know, $3 billion. We're talking about that number tripling, and that's just the law. If you go to court and try this, that number is going to triple. So you could easily see a number that puts the NCAA in trouble of disbanding itself, because they're not going to be able to afford this over the long haul and be able to operate their business.
Brandon, we'll get you out of here on this. One of the interesting meetings that I think maybe flies under the radar a little bit is the SEC spring meetings that are coming up in about 3 or 4 weeks in Destin. It seems like there's always more and more to discuss there. Have you looked ahead to that? Do you know what might be some of the big talking points on the table?
A little bit. Of course, you know, just regulating the House settlement should it go through, which we'll know by then if that's the case. Also, this has been discussed for 3 years, it seems like now, whether the SEC football schedule should go from 8 games to 9 games. I think that there will probably be a decision made there finally in May. And my belief is that they're going to end up pushing to 9 games. There's been a lot of feedback on that over the last several years. There's been a little bit more support for 9 games. I think we're probably going to end up moving to that situation, contingent on whether the college football playoff format and everything gets decided on before then. Mm. If that doesn't happen, we might see the can kick down the road again for another few months, because they'd have to probably make a decision in the winter once the CFP finally gets their ducks in a row.
There have been a lot of ink spilled over 8 and 9 SEC games, hadn't there?
It's crazy, and it's all going to come down to really the money issue. Is ESPN going to be willing to give them more money for the extra games? They've talked about this, painting it with how does the College Football Playoff Committee and the system look at the SEC and the amount of games they play and their strength of schedule and all this. But if the SEC is able to push across the idea that they and the Big Ten get 4 or 3 automatic qualifiers no matter what, at that point, it's a very easy decision to move to 9 games, because you give yourself more inventory and you've already assured yourself you're going to get at least three or four teams into the playoff every year. And also, you present an opportunity to create a new postseason format of your own in the SEC, where you play maybe an SEC championship game, but also play another game between the number 3 and 4 team in there, or even lower. That's going your own kind of makeshift playoff that are play-in games to go into the CFP.
Fascinating. Of course, there's all the talk. What happens? Do you continue to have the Power 5 require Power 4 now requirement for other games? It just feels like there's much, much more that falls out of every decision that's made. Brandon, you do a great job reporting on all this. We appreciate you joining us.
All right, thanks, Matt. Appreciate you, man.
All right, when we come back, Ethan Westerman's going to be in studio, but first a word from Kendall King.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over 4 decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design, with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Welcome back. I want to tell you about our friends at Bentonville Glass. They've been serving their community since 1971. Committed, professional, versatile. If you're looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas or looking for skilled craftsmanship, look no further than Bentonville Glass for all your glass market needs with the highest quality products. You can come by and see them at 507 South Main in Bentonville or online at BentonvilleGlass.com. You can get the latest breaking news on all Razorback sports at WholeHogSports.com. Most in-depth source for all Arkansas sports, analysis, latest in recruiting, unique stories on all your favorite teams. Subscribe today at WholeHogSports.com. Also hope you'll subscribe to our podcast. You can find us on Apple by searching Whole Hog Sports, or you can find the video version of our show on our Whole Hog Sports YouTube page. Ethan Westerman is in studio with me. Before we talk Arkansas softball, quick note, Arkansas baseball not going to play tonight at Missouri State. The rains are going to be real heavy tonight, both here in Northwest Arkansas and up in Southwest Missouri. So no Arkansas-Missouri State game. This game is not going to get rescheduled. Arkansas is going to end up with a 55-game regular season schedule. They'll be on the field again Thursday evening against Texas. Texas number 1 yesterday in the USA Today coaches poll. They're number 1 in all the polls, but the coaches poll is our poll of record. Arkansas, they're kind of all over the board in baseball. They're number 5 in the coaches poll. They're number 6 in the Collegiate Baseball Writers Association poll. They are number 10 by Baseball America, number 11 by D1 Baseball, and number 12 by Perfect Game. So, Ethan, there's a lot of ambiguity, I guess, about where to put Arkansas baseball right now.
Yeah, and what that tells me, anytime that you have a hard time stacking up teams like that, there's not a whole lot separating. Like, if Texas is unanimous number 1, then they're unanimous number 1. But whenever what's behind that, it's like anybody can beat anybody on any given weekend. I mean, frankly, anybody can probably beat Texas. Like, I say anybody, any of those top teams, like, all it takes is a good weekend. It's just whenever you have that much just closeness in a poll or, like, variation between them, it usually means that, some people just like one thing about your team more than this other publication does, and I don't know. It all shakes out at the end.
You have to make a decision on what poll you're going to use. And long time ago, we made a decision to use for baseball the coaches poll. I like it for a couple of reasons. Number one, you got 30 voters in it. Number two, and well, just to backtrack a second, a lot of these polls have like 2 voters, 4 voters, 5 voters, something like that. I like the, you know, the difference of opinion. The other thing I like about coaches is that they don't have a lot of knee-jerk reactions to a team losing a series or 2 series, or in Arkansas's case, 3 series. I mean, think about Arkansas. They've lost 3 series in a row, and they've only dropped from number 1 to number 5. I think the coaches, you know, they look at this more from maybe not necessarily how you're playing in the here and now. That certainly has an effect. But they look at it from just a pure talent standpoint. And I think that's why Arkansas has only dropped to number 5. That's why Tennessee, who's lost 3 of its last 4 series, including 2 in a row, has only dropped to number 6. Georgia has not played its best baseball in the last month. They're number 7. And so I kind of tend to think, and if you look at the coaches poll, I think it kind of dovetails pretty nicely with the RPI, which is what the selection committee uses. Now, that's not to say that if Arkansas loses its last 3 series, they're going to be sitting at number 5, because they ain't. But I think that this probably is a little bit more accurate reflection of, if the season ended now, what national seeds would look like when the NCAA tournament selection committee made its choices.
Yeah, for sure. And it's one of those things with these polls where it's just, you got to find one that you think, I mean, whenever you're finding your poll of record, which one just makes the most sense logically throughout a year. And I think that, you know, on the baseball side, the coaches poll certainly seems like one that does as good of a job as anybody. On the softball side, it's like a different story, where the coaches poll just doesn't have much rhyme or reason to it most of the time.
We're going
to
get into that.
But, you know, it's one of those deals where you just pick a poll and you go with it.
One more quick note on baseball before you switch over to softball. This is going to be the first time when Texas comes in that a number 1 ranked team in the coaches poll has come to Bum Walker Stadium since 2009. Arizona State in 2009, that was that midweek series where Arizona State was number 1 in a couple of polls, and Arkansas was number 1 in a poll, and there was all this talk about, well, it's number 1 versus number 1, which never really quite made a whole lot of sense, but it was framed that way. So Arizona State in 2009 was the last team that played here as the number 1 team. Vanderbilt in 2011, they won a series here in Fayetteville, and when they left the next day, they were ranked number 1 in the coaches poll. There have been some number 1 teams in other polls. Kentucky in 2012 in collegiate baseball, LSU in 13 in collegiate baseball, South Carolina in 14 in collegiate baseball, and LSU in 15 in Baseball America have been number 1 in other polls since 2009. But it just kind of goes to show you that, you know, this is something that doesn't happen very often, that the number 1 ranked team comes to Fayetteville.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
Unless it resides in Fayetteville. That's happened quite a bit in the last few years.
Yeah, and it's one of those deals where whenever it happens, you gotta, you know, you expect a pretty big turn. Arkansas, Texas, no matter what, I think you expect a pretty big turnout. Honestly, any SEC home series, you expect a big turnout, but it's just gonna, I think, maybe be on steroids with kind of the dynamics of this weekend. It would have helped, I think, had Arkansas come in with a series win at Florida or whatever, but end of the day, it's Arkansas, Texas. People will show up.
The home attendances have not been – they haven't been bad, but they could have been a lot better when you think about when Missouri came in, you had the weather component, and you had to have the doubleheader, and then Texas A&M comes in. It's a Thursday, Friday, Saturday, but you can't play on Saturday, and so you've got another doubleheader in the middle of a work day afternoon. I think the weather's going to hold off this weekend, and I think we're going to have pretty big crowds over there, and certainly looking forward to seeing that. Yeah. All right, let's go to softball, because they're going to play Thursday, Friday, Saturday here in Fayetteville too. LSU comes in. Arkansas, you touched on this a second ago. In the softball polls, it's about as ambiguous as it is for baseball. They're kind of all over the map, but what we're seeing is that this is a team. They beat A&M in College Station over the weekend. A&M was ranked number 2 at the time. This is a team that has knocked off a ton of top-flight softball teams in the last 4 or 5 weeks, and I feel like they've put themselves in a really good position to be one of the top eight national seeds when their NCAA tournament field is selected in within the next 2 weeks.
Yeah, I mean, you always got to remember theirs is a little bit ahead of baseball, how the schedule works. So, I mean, SEC tournament, we'll know by Saturday night the seedings and matchups, and it's single elimination, which I believe didn't baseball turn to that this year?
In the SEC tournament?
Yeah.
Yes.
That's how softball has always
been for a while.
But it's just, it's nice because we'll get the seedings and know the matchups by the end of this week, and then a week from that, from then is going to be selection Sunday for softball. It's really exciting, I think, whenever you get to this close to the postseason, just being able to now, you know, for so long you're kind of trying to get an idea of who could be the contenders for top seeds. Now you're at the point where I think you can actually do scenarios, and you can be like, okay, if they just don't lose four in a row or something, they probably have a top eight seed. Or if they, you know, you can do this and that, the type of just figuring out who's probably at the top line. But yeah, it looks like this is their best shot to be a top eight seed since the 2022 season, whenever they were the fourth overall seed. So this is a team that, yeah, they're picking up like plenty of momentum heading into the postseason. That's been the case, I think, the past 2 years that they've played pretty well. And then their last regular season weekend has been a problem for them the past 2 years. They lost at unranked Missouri in the series, and they lost at home to unranked Ole Miss in the series last year. So they've got to find a way, I think, to keep piecing it together and not get too caught up looking ahead.
They started 1-5 in SEC play,
mm-hmm.
and Oklahoma was accounted for three of those losses. They didn't have a good opening weekend against Ole Miss, but since then they've won at Florida, they've won at Tennessee, they've won at A&M, like we mentioned. What's been the difference with them, say, over the last 6-7 weeks that you didn't see that first week?
Well, certainly the first week, nothing was going well, to be honest. Like, they weren't hitting well, they weren't pitching well. I mean, other than, I guess, in Game 3, they were so mad about it that they beat Ole Miss 20-3 to make sure they didn't get swept. But then against Oklahoma, they honestly didn't play that bad. They were right there in every game. Like, there's even Game 1 was 7-0 Oklahoma, but you look back and it was 1-0 entering the last inning, and a swinging bunt kind of changed the whole momentum of that game that got Oklahoma a lot of momentum. It's like all three games were pretty close. They just couldn't get over the top against OU. And then they figured out something at Tennessee for sure. I mean, they went up against probably SEC Pitcher of the Year, Carlin Pickens, who set the record for fastest throw in softball history this year against Arkansas. And they took the first game against her and they won that series. And then since then, they haven't been beaten a series. I think that what happened for them is they just kind of had to taste beating a top team because they hadn't yet. That was like the big thing that was keeping people from ranking them high, was it was they had all these wins, but it was like against who? Then they go and beat Tennessee. And I think that just kind of maybe belief is a real thing, in my opinion. I think that once a team starts really believing, it's hard to stop them. And I think that that's where they're at right now, is they just don't really, like, if they played OU tomorrow, I don't think they freak out or anything at all as far as like it being OU. I think they genuinely think right now they can beat anybody. It's going to take them really having to lock in, though, and not get like too comfortable, if that makes sense. Such a mental game, but I think the things that have gotten them to this point is what they got to lean back on. And they're running into an LSU team this weekend that just got done beating Florida in a series. They actually played last night and I think run-ruled Florida to win the series. And they kind of went through a similar, right before that Florida series had, I think they were like 2-7 or something in their previous nine games SEC, but they beat Florida, and you wonder if that's the type of belief that an LSU team needs coming into Arkansas. So I think it's a sneaky good series.
And LSU's been ranked real high all
year,
too.
They have excellent pitching, I know. I think they're hitting, they're offensively not as good as Arkansas, but they have the pitching to stack up against anybody. So it's going to be I'm expecting a really good series this weekend. I don't think either team's going to get a sweep.
You mentioned something the other day after they beat A&M, all the teams that they have beaten on the road since, what, 21, 22, somewhere in there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's like you kind of step back and look at this like, wow, that's incredible.
Yeah.
It's a number of ranked teams, and what is it, 18 of the last 20 road series they've won?
They've won 18 of the last 20 SEC road series. 14 of those 18 have been against ranked teams, and then their last, like, four or five have been against top 10 teams. Mm-hmm. So it's like And Courtney Dyfel talked about it on the SEC Network, does their rally cap show every Sunday night, and they had her on. And she said that she just thinks that the team gets on the road, it's just like they're isolated, and they kind of get to create their own momentum and energy. And I've watched Texas A&M baseball games before, and I know how hostile they are in baseball. I did not expect what I saw softball. Like, they were doing the same stuff. And, I mean, there were bubbles flying everywhere. It's kind of the same deal that at Bogle Park, if the bases are loaded, now people wear the beer hats. It's like things just so easily translate at these SEC schools from, oh, this is what we do at baseball, this is what we do at softball. But they were loud, and they were into it, and that's a really nice stadium that they have.
It is. I was in College Station last year. I think it was on regional weekend. And, I mean, just every now and then you'd hear from down the street, you know, these real loud roars. And it's like, what is that? That's a softball game.
Yeah.
They support their team there.
It's one of the newer stadiums in the SEC, and you can tell. You just see the broadcast and see everything. I mean, they have the capability there, which not many SEC softball stadiums do, to, like, track home run distance, these pitch speeds. I mean, they got the TrackMan system and everything. And I think – in the SEC this year, them and Oklahoma are the ones. Maybe Texas does it at theirs too, but it's very nice when you have that.
Everything at College Station is built right, like from an athletic standpoint. I mean, it is tight together. Like, here's Kyle Field, and across the street is Bluebell Diamond, and its parking lot is shared with Reed Arena. And then you've got the old softball stadium that hasn't been torn down. And then you have the soccer stadium. And then you've got the new indoor track. And then you've got the new softball stadium. And literally you can walk from like the farthest one to the football stadium in 3 or 4 minutes.
Yeah.
Just kind of a neat deal there.
All their places I feel like have like kind of – they're very Texas names for their – like, I mean, they're calling their softball stadium Davis Diamond. And that just is such a Texas – what is baseball blue –
well, I mean, it's
Bluebell Park.
It's Bluebell Park at Olson Field. It used to be Olson Field, and what they did was they basically kind of like what they did with Kyle Field, the football stadium. I think they basically kind of tore Olson Field down and rebuilt it really fast. And Bluebell, the ice cream manufacturer, or did I say it right? Ice cream, maker, the ice cream people. They gave a ton of money, so they renamed it Bluebell Park at Olson Field.
Yeah. Well, all these places there have like a very generic last name.
What's funny about A&M is that a lot of times it will be, you know, such and such, their name, and then their year that they graduated A&M, and then whatever, you know. So it'll be like the such and such 38 indoor track facility.
Yeah. Anyway, I just threw us down this whole rabbit hole. All that to say,
we do a good job of that.
They played at Davis Diamond, and it's a very nice stadium. It was cool to see that they were playing in a venue like that. I mean, it rivals, I think, any of them right now.
Yeah, it's neat. All right, so SEC awards come out next week for softball. Courtney Dyfel, any chance she gets Coach of the Year?
There's a chance. I think the South Carolina coach stands a really good shot because she's had them top 10. She's a first-year coach, and they were predicted to finish last in the SEC. So I think anytime that happens, you stand a good chance. But I'd say
what about Pat Agasso?
Yeah, so I don't know. Maybe she'll win it. It's just hard to – I think it's hard to give her that award just given how close the league is this year.
But it is her first year in the league.
It is. It is.
They're down this year. They're only 42-5.
It's so funny how that works. That they're going to be number one in pretty much every poll that releases, but it's like, oh, they aren't as good this year. But the thing is, yeah, I think that the list right now has got to be South Carolina's coach Chastain. I think Courtney's up there. Like, she's top two or three, I'd say. And then I'd probably Patty Gasso.
What about Bree Ellis? Any any real threat to her winning Player of the Year?
You got to think about SEC Player of the Year takes conference stats into play. And I do – I mean, I think coaches will vote her to win it because she's, like, leading in RBI. I think she's one behind in home run. Her on base is astronomical. Her slugging is, too. But with SEC-only stats, half these teams have it's not half, but a lot of these teams have been intentionally walking her to where it's like you don't get the chance to record as many, like, home runs. So the only thing I could see keeping her back is literally that, is that she hasn't had as many opportunities. But, like, I still think they'll vote her put an SEC Player of the Year. I mean, she's the National Player of the Year frontrunner, and it's not – if you talk to most people in the industry, they say it's not really that close right now. So – I'd be surprised if she didn't win SEC Player of the Year, but I mean, you think back to whenever Arkansas, like I said, the 2022 season when they were number four, KB Sides won SEC Player of the Year that year, but Daniel Gibson was like a top 10 national finalist because KB's numbers were so good in SEC play, but Daniel had the overall season stats. I'm like, that's what it would have to take for Bree to not win SEC Player of the Year, but I think that she'll... You look at the stats, I'm like, how do these coaches... How do you not pitch to her because you're so afraid that she's going to send one over the wall and then not vote her SEC Player of the Year? Because the coaches, I think, vote on these, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's, I just think that it's probably what's going to happen.
Yeah, with softball, it's one of those sports where you only get a coach's player of the year. Some sports you'll get, AP will vote for play. Like there was that one year when Mason Jones won the award. There were three different players who won SEC player of the year because like a couple of them split, like two of them either split the AP vote and the coach's vote, and then one person got the other or vice versa. And so sometimes you can end up with a ton of these mm-hmm. players getting these awards. But
yeah, softball
would be surprised if there's more than one.
Softball is one of those sports that, yeah, it really is. Like the awards that they win are pretty exclusive because it's like USA Softball National Player of the Year. Like maybe other publications will have theirs, but like that is the one that everybody's looking to. And SEC, I mean, it's like if you win SEC Pitcher of the Year, you were the SEC Pitcher of the Year.
KB Sides is the only player who's ever won SEC Player of the Year for Arkansas softball. Switching gears real quick, football. You wrote about Trevor Jackson and the new Florida State transfer quarterback who's coming to Arkansas. What'd you learn about him?
Yeah, I mean, it seems like it's quite literally a plug-and-place type situation as far as you want him to fill what Matt Niumaliava was going to do at Arkansas and kind of lead the third-team offense probably. He was the scout team quarterback at Florida State, and I mean, what that requires, anybody who's a scouting quarterback, you got to be able to turn around really quickly and simulate another offense, another quarterback. So I think that's something that you have to, if you're an Arkansas fan, probably excited about his ability to do that. He wasn't quite ready at Florida State to actually get a meaningful shot, but apparently, you know, the season that Florida State had, I don't think people realize how bad it was. I mean, this is resembling 2018-19 Arkansas teams. Mm-hmm. They were 2-10 with their wins over Cal and Charleston Southern. I mean, they were bad this past year, and it was one of those deals where I think fans were like, why not give him a shot? Mm-hmm. I mean, nothing else was working, but he's a throw-first guy. He's got a great arm. If you talk to anybody, they say that's his strength. He's got a really strong arm. I think he can run, but he's just not – that's not what he's known for. But it seems like he's a guy that is going to come to Arkansas and probably just be – yeah, your job is to make sure the third-team offense is ready to simulate – who you're playing that week, and maybe in the future battle to see if you can work your way up. But I mean, surely this first season, you got Taylen Green and probably KJ Jackson very defined as 1 and 2. He does come from a big high school in Florida, Jones High School. It's in the Orlando area. Mm-hmm. They're in the same classification as St. Thomas
Aquinas
mm-hmm. and Homestead, which are two schools that just you hear all the time, like, oh, that player, like, I've heard those school names so many times. He was in the same classification, lost in the state semifinals to Homestead there in his senior year, but it's such a, if you're a good quarterback at that classification, it says something to me, because you're competing against such good talent. He was also in high school, he got invited to Elite 11, which is like the quarterback camp. It's been a deal for since like 1999, where these high-level quarterbacks get invited to compete, and he was at one with DJ Lagway, Raiola, the Nebraska quarterback, Michael Hawkins, the Oklahoma one. Mm-hmm. So he was highly rated, but he wasn't really highly recruited for some reason. Like, he was a preferred walk-on at Florida State, but he was a Rivals four-star, so it doesn't make all that much sense. And a reporter I talked to from Florida State said he doesn't really know the whole backstory of why he was a preferred walk-on, but he said it's pretty clear he's a guy who should have signed somewhere. So, anyway.
Sometimes those star ratings, they can really fluctuate. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's no different than what we just saw in the NFL draft. You know, I mean, Mel Kiper thought Shedeur Sanders was a top five overall pick, and then you had scouts who said that maybe you shouldn't even draft him at all.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's all in the eye of the beholder.
For sure.
Probably more so at quarterback than any other position.
I think the theme of today's podcast is everybody has different opinions. Between these rankings of baseball and softball teams, between these prospects out of high school, between all this stuff, it's just like everybody's going to have different opinions. But it sounds like this guy has undeniable arm talent. That's the one thing that you'll – I mean, I was told you will see that pretty clearly immediately. He has a good arm.
lawyers have different opinions on how NIL contracts ought to be constructed. Our thanks to Brandon Marcello for being with us today. Ethan, thank you for being in here. We'll be back with another podcast tomorrow. Until then, hope that we see you at our website, wholehogsports.com. Have a great day, everybody.